reality. When you do come forward
on the sound system, asked for their attention, I think there must have been adrenaline coursing through his body at that threshold place where fear and courage meet, and courage decides to let fear be its companion, but not its captor. I wonder what it felt like to be an immigrant student at that high school, head on desk, not listening to the PA system, because, dude, it is always boring when they tell us what's for lunch or what the new stupid rule is. But then the ear pricks up, the heart is alerted. He's talking about me. A lot of people have been talking about me, about my family, about my people, about my nation, and it hasn't been good, but I'm hearing love. What does it look like to be love? To make sure that those who are the focus of so much vitriol, of alarming executive orders, of hate crimes, that they feel beloved. That they feel belonging. Does it look like Victoria, Texas, where a mosque was burned to the ground last weekend? Here is what happened. Robert Loeb, the president of Temple B'nai Israel in the small town, he was reported to say, "Here, everyone knows everybody. I know several members of the mosque, and we felt for them. When a calamity like this happens, we have to stand together. We have probably 25 or 30 Jewish people in Victoria, and they have probably 100 Muslims. We got a lot of building for a small amount of Jews." And then one of the mosque's founders, Shahid Hashmi, said, "Jewish community members walked into my home and gave me the key to the synagogue." To whom do we hand our keys? Our TUS keys, metaphorical or real, and in our case, the secret combination. Access to this space we steward not just for ourselves, but in service of a vision we have for this world. There is a call for houses of worship to become sanctuary for those who might need it, for those, and I apologize for this phrase, it's so coarse, low-hanging fruit, easily identified by the current administration for quick deportation. The dreamers, initially protected by DACA, now made more vulnerable by it. Those Muslim men, then aged 16 to 65, who were required to register with the NCR program after 9/11, supposedly that registry has not been in use for years, was dismantled before the last president left, but there is now talk, rumors, that it might be able to be used. How about those folks whose deportations were stayed before? They now are at high risk, including those individuals who the Reformed Church of Highland Park gave sanctuary to over the past decade and who have become interwoven in our shared communities. They are our friends and neighbors. They are now at higher risk. Is sanctuary what love looks like? What beloved community looks like? Do we have an umbrella that we can share with a stranger? Organizers in the sanctuary movement speak of sanctuary behaviors, and I appreciated that so much when I went to a recent workshop, recognizing that while not every house of worship can physically host a person or a family, every house of worship can choose other means of supporting the sanctuary movement. And that's important for us to think about. Supporting those houses of worship that do make the bold choice to host someone, it is hard and long work. Offering free space for workshops on knowing one's rights. organizing rapid response teams that would shine social media light or your body's light when ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, comes in the middle of the night. And that's when they do it, friends, to pick up people for detention and deportation. That is what is being asked across the nation. Does love look like thousands, thousands and upon thousands who showed up at our international airports across the country on such short notice to witness, to decry the chaotic immigration executive order and travel ban, explicitly targeting people from some, but not all, not the ones with whom our government has business ties, from Muslim-majority countries? Now, I didn't go to Newark Airport. I don't know if any of you did. Blessings upon you. If you did, I'd love to hear about it. I live, what, half an hour away, and I could have gone, though it would have been a significant inconvenience given what was going on in my family. But I could have, and I didn't. And I'm still sorting that out. I do know I am deeply grateful for those who did. Newark, JFK, Philly, SFO, Dallas, Los Angeles, the list goes on. And I breathe into this truth, right, that we can't be everywhere all the time. Sometimes my mind makes me think that I am the exception to the rule. But that's not particularly spiritual. That said, I do think we have to figure out how we are going to show up in that particular way, not just for planned and scheduled marches like happened several weeks ago, but the drop everything right now calls to gather, to be a part of social witness, to resist the encroachment of authoritarianism. More and more of these opportunities are happening because, tragically, more and more they are necessary. But here's the thing that I put my hat of hope on this week. There is evidence that showing up turns the tide. Researchers Erica Chenoweth and Maria Stefan have studied major nonviolent and violent campaigns for the removal of a government or for territorial liberation since 1900. And their conclusion is that twice as likely are nonviolent campaigns to be successful as violent ones. And Chenoweth wrote this week in The Guardian that if 3.5% of a population engages in sustained nonviolent resistance, a for the long haul presence, a movement, not a moment, to an authoritarian leader or government, it will topple. Some of you showed up last Sunday evening attending the vigil for immigrants at the Reformed Church of Highland Park. And perhaps that is one way we might, you might, choose to be a sanctuary congregation, supporting them if, and I'm going to say it's more likely when, they choose once again to take in those being targeted for unjust deportation. Vigils, protests, acts of social witness, like the Burma Shave Love Your Neighbor signs along our frontage, crossing the awkward, I capitalize that, it's a whole thing, crossing the awkward, getting into that uncomfortable space of building relationships with those we do not know well or at all, but who are in the crosshairs of our national tragedy. This, more and more, this is what these times call for. How do we be love? A week ago Friday, I was on a conference call with 999 other faith leaders from across the land taking part in a conversation about moral resistance. And we spoke of a week of concerted actions of solidarity with our Muslim brothers and sisters. And you were part of this love. Jillian, our director of religious education, made beautiful big cards with seriously 10 hours notice for the two mosques with whom we are in renewed relationship. Children signed them, youth signed them, adults signed them. And then one of our newer congregants, Laura, there she is, she happened to have blank cards with her. Who has blank cards with them? Well, she did. And they were cards that followed her over many, many years. She told me that she carried the cards from Kansas, to California, Virginia, Japan, Italy, and then finally here to New Jersey, never knowing why she kept them, since it was clear she would never use them. Then she saw a message from me on Saturday night, hoping folks would use coffee hour to write messages. I wasn't going to be here to help. And then she realized what the purpose of those cards was and carrying them all these years. And out of those beautiful messages of love and friendship and solidarity and comfort, we delivered them to two Muslim communities on Friday with other faith leaders from East Brunswick, as well as our own Bob Munson. And on Saturday, yesterday, as Linda said during candles, Linda and Kathy, representatives from your board, and Troy, we met with the one here in East Brunswick, a smaller group. So this is indeed love. Meaningful gestures significant to our interfaith neighbors. And in return for our meeting with our Muslim neighbors over on New Brunswick Avenue yesterday, they gave us flowers there in the lobby. And it was a delightful conversation we had, including talking about the vagaries of unpaved parking lots. It was wonderful, these gestures of love, just as they are. They were so good, and also they come from that place within our comfort zones. It feels good. It is easy to write a card. It does not ask much of us. But these times are calling us to an ever fiercer love. One that will be rarely comfortable, that will mean adrenaline coursing through our bodies, not just the bodies of people about whom we hear stories. And perhaps you have already found yourself in such a situation, the fierce love of interrupting someone, harassing one of our beloved gay or lesbian or bi or trans or genderqueer friends or neighbors or strangers, that fierce, awkward love of calling a friend or a coworker in, not out, in on something they said that was racist or sexist or just plain ignorant. Maybe you know that feeling already. It's good practice. These times are asking of us, are requiring of us that we not only write cards and messages, but that we move out of the house of our own comfort and be the deliverer of these messages, that we meet our neighbors, not here on our turf, but on theirs, and we're already doing it. Or that we do actions not of our making, but of the request of those we're trying to be an allyship with. Like perhaps showing support for the East Brunswick Mosque expansion at the township's planning board meeting on February 15th. They're not encountering hesitation, but they're also not experiencing support from outside their community. Maybe that could be us. We need not risk our lives or our humanity in these efforts, but we do need to risk our current contours of our comfort zones. This too living outside our comfort zones, this is part and particle of beloved community, of being love. Being love is built on a sense of deep connection, and with deep connection comes complexity. It's not easy because there is discomfort, there's anxiety, there's a lot of unknown. So in building beloved community, may we find ourselves in community with folks who do not share our politics and theologies. It will happen. Folks who do not honor our sense of God or not God. And yet we are called to be in beloved community, to be love, nevertheless, finding the intersections of our common humanity as a starting place. It's not only possible, our very survival is predicated on it. So be longing for something better. Be love, beloved. Do so even when adrenaline is coursing through your veins, as it is likely a sign that you are on the path that requires courage. Be love in order to be a portable sanctuary with your presence in the world. Be love to save your own soul, your own humanity. And choose love, not because we are guaranteed that it will win if we do, because it is guaranteed to lose if we don't. Blessed be, and amen. We're going to come together for our final hymn. It's number 131 in the gray hymnal, Love Will Guide Us.